What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and gifted musician. For the past four decades, he has proven himself to be a versatile composer, arranger, and producer in a wide variety of styles and music. Most recently, he became the lead guitarist for the smooth jazz group 4Play. Please put your hands together and welcome jazz guitarist, producer, and composer, Chuck Loeb. How's it going, Chuck?
Oh, it's going great. It's great to be on with you. I'm doing good.
Oh, man, appreciate you taking the time and chopping it up with me, Chuck. You know, I've been a huge fan of yours for a while, man, and you got so many new things on your plate, man. I had to talk to you.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Man, you know, first off, man, congratulations on your new position with 4Play. Man, that's just a phenomenal accomplishment. I'm a huge fan of 4Play also, man, and just know that you're going to be part of the group. As soon as I heard the news, I just like, oh, my God, Chuck Loeb and 4Play, man, this is going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, man, I'm a fan, too. I've been a fan of that band since the beginning. When I'm a friend of Bob's, and, you know, when he put the band together, I started listening and buying their records right away and just loved it from the beginning. So you can imagine, you know, to become part of that legacy is a big honor and a thrill for me, you know. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
Man, you know, I've heard the CD a couple of times and, you know, title CD, Let's Touch the Sky. You know, there's so many tracks out there that just stick with me. As a fan and also of your playing, you know, I noticed Third Degree is where I saw a lot of your signature licks that I'm used to hearing from you as a player, man. You know, just to have that on, you know, the 4Play composition, it just worked like hand in glove, so.
Yeah, it was funny, you know, because I, you know, you want to fit in with the band, but you can't help having your own style. I mean, it's sort of automatic, right?
Yeah.
So I think on that track, I was thinking about 4Play, but then, you know, my influence just jumped in there, and it really became a hybrid, you know, of the two things, and that's really what the guys from the beginning told me they wanted. They didn't want me to come in to try to imitate Lee or Larry. That's Lee, you know, Lee Ritenour or Larry Carlton. They wanted me to be myself, and you know, I took them at their word, and it made me feel real comfortable in doing that. And I think that, you know, I'm very proud of the record. I think the results sort of show that it works, I think.
Oh, no, it's a smashing album, again, from, like, start one of the first track, you know, all the way through. And the remake you guys did with Ruben Studdard from Teddy Pendergrass's, that was just another smash, man, so.
Isn't that great, man? Oh. He just knocked me out, man. It was awesome.
But, you know, Chuck, you're no stranger to success, man. You had a very successful solo career, man. You had 7 solo albums. You know, some of the stuff that I gravitated to was a lot of your older stuff, like Pocket Change is probably one of my favorite songs that you've ever done.
Oh, me too, man. I'm glad to hear that. I love that one, man. Very proud of that track.
You know, there's so many elements in Pocket Change. For one, it is right in the pocket, the way you're playing and your guitar and all the dynamics that's going on within the composition. Man, how did you come up with that particular track, and why did you title it Pocket Change?
Actually, you know, that track actually has a pretty interesting story, because I recorded that twice. I recorded it as a producer because I was producing a project for a young pianist named Sergio Salvatore. He's a monster piano player. When we did his project, he was only 16 years old, and it was his third CD.
Wow.
So imagine, I mean, he's a really talented guy. And so we recorded that tune, right? And it was an all-star band with Steve Gadd and Will Lee and a whole bunch of people playing on it. And I thought the tune, you know, was a real winner, but it never really got the airplay or the attention on that project as I thought it could have. And when I was working on, you know, Heartbeat, the album that it had been, of mine that it ended up on, the drummer that was playing with me, a fantastic drummer from Germany named Wolfgang Hafner, he always loved it. He said, you know, why don't you re-record that tune, man? And I said, yeah, that's a great idea. We went in, and it was one of those magical things where you start playing it in the studio, and it's like, wow, it just kind of, you know, snapped off the tape, you know, it just sounded perfect. And lo and behold, you know, it became one of my biggest numbers, and got a lot of success, it is a standout to me. So you never know. I mean, you got to go with your instincts on these things.
Definitely, especially for composition and production. It's like, you know, I always try to not have too much personal interest in a track where I can't be flexible and, you know, make alterations or, you know, write something that's pleasing for the crowd, you know, but just to have that different size and inputs on things definitely helps, you know.
Yeah.
You know what, Chuck, you've been out for a long time, man, and, you know, I kind of look at you one of the forefathers of guitar playing and jazz guitar playing specifically, you know, with your particular style. I think a lot of people gravitate to you as a go-to guy for pulling chops. You know, I got to ask you, man, with all the experience that you have, who were some of your influences, you know, starting out as a guitarist and then merging into who you are now as a musician?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of them, but I think that the key ones for me, it's interesting, you know, I started out more in the rock and R&B area and blues. I started out as a big fan of Jimi Hendrix and Cream and the Beatles and Stones, that era, and Stevie Wonder, too, at the beginning. And then I discovered jazz when I was around 16 years old, and the guy that turned my head around was Wes Montgomery. I heard an album of his called Smoking at the Half Note, and that was just, you know, like, it's like somebody bopped me on the head and said, okay, that's it, you know? And then, you know, so then my journey into jazz started. And then I went off and I went to college and I came back and went on the road a little bit. When I got back to New York, I was influenced quite a bit by a lot of the studio players. And I started doing studio work, you know, and that was where my production chops came together. I was doing a million sessions, started out just as a guitar player, then started writing and arranging, and then I started producing, and one thing led to another. And that was really my schooling in terms of production. I was doing mostly commercials and TV music, and I took that experience and transformed it into my recording production career, you know, for doing albums and CDs, both for myself and other artists. And, you know, the funny thing about it, I would say, is that, you know, the early influences of, you know, the rock pop stuff from the 60s, as a compositional style, was always really, you know, in me, so that part was there. But as a guitarist, I was a jazz guy, you know, like I loved Wes and Pat Martino and George Benson. So the automatic combination of those two things, like the pop songwriting plus the jazz guitar playing, really is jazz or contemporary or smooth jazz, as they call it, you know.
Yeah.
And so I kind of fell into this style, which fit me to a T. So I was very fortunate, you know, very lucky. I feel blessed, you know, to be able to do all this stuff because I love it all so much.
You know, speaking of, you know, merging the different styles, I'm a huge fan of thinking outside the box for compositions and pulling from different aspects of music, from rock, pop, jazz, funk, and really putting it all together into your own, you know, melodies and compositions. What was your specific methods when you're putting your compositions together on your solo CDs and also playing on somebody else's stuff? Is there any specific method that you use for chops and things when you want to add elements and different styles of music? Because there's a lot of people who, you know, you listen to music, but are you really studying these styles to be as a player, or you just listen to it as a fan, you know? Because I just feel there is a difference, you know?
Yeah, well, I get, you know what the biggest difference is that, you know, these different kinds of music, you know, they require a certain amount of study, you know, and you know, I mean, it's a nice kind of study because you're studying something that you love, but, you know, I've really, you know, examined, you know, like, certainly, like, what it takes to play the jazz guitar, you know, study Wes Montgomery solos and Pat Martino solos and George Benson, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then on the other side of the fence, when I listen to, you know, when I was listening to, like, oh, you know, you could take a bunch of different records, but, you know, if you're listening to a really beautifully produced project, let's say, you know, a Stevie Wonder, you know, talking book kind of thing, or a Steely Dan record, let's say, where it's like, you know, they really went to the mat to make this sound a certain way. I study those records the same way, you know, like, what do they do to get it to sound so cool, and what's the mix elements, and what's the different combinations of you know, sounds that they're using and the style of miking and all that stuff. So it is kind of like putting it together involves, you know, doing your homework and studying something if you really love it. And I feel that I've done that. I mean, I have a kind of a vision of what I want a project to sound like when I go into it.
You know, you're also a producer and composer and arranger. And I know you have countless of thousands of hours in the studio lab for recording and mixing and things. You know, I want to talk a little bit about your signal chain on your guitar, because that really stands out to me on your CDs, is how clear and thick your sound is on your lead guitars, you know, whether you're playing a Strat or, you know, when you're doing your double octaves and things. It's really sitting well in the mix. Is there anything specifically for preamps or effects that you're using, you know, if it's external or internal?
Yeah, well, I'm a person that believes that you use whatever tools it takes to get the sound to be correct. And I've done a lot of different kinds of methods of recording, both my guitar and other instruments. But specifically in terms of the guitar, I use a Tube Tech Mic Pre, which is a beautiful. It's a mic pre, but I use it as a DI box, both for guitar and bass.
Sure.
And it's very warm and clear, those two things together, which is not always easy to find. And I do a lot of recording of the guitar direct. I have on certain records used both miking and direct, or just miking at times as well, but I would say from 75% to 90% of it I'm going direct, which a lot of people find hard to believe. And also a lot of it is solid body guitars, even though it's got a jazz sound to it. So people are somewhat surprised sometimes when they hear that. But I think what you said about it being clear, I think that has a lot to do with it, because to get it to sit in the mix right, there's a clarity to the direct approach. You know, I use plugins for coloring, you know, like either amp design and of course delays, reverb, compression, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes use a C4 compressor to be able to compress only certain areas of the equalization so that you can get that, you know, jazz guitar, you want a fat sound, you know.
Right.
But you want it to fit in the mix and not get in the way of the keyboards or the bass or the drums, you know what I mean?
So exactly.
It's a tricky thing, you know, and we've got pretty much, you think you get it down to a science and then you got a track and it just doesn't work and you got to tweak it a little bit, you know.
So right. You know, guitarists, drummers, vocalists, man, you know, they're really picky as far as, you know, the pre-mix of, you know, going into the track. And it's like, man, I have to hear my sound before I actually record. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think for a lot of people, it helps harmonically you bring out your sound, you know. And, you know, having that good signal going into your recording definitely helps you get into the groove a little bit more, in my opinion. So I'm one of those guys anyway, so...
Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you what, it's people talk about the difference between live performing and recording, right? And there's a huge difference, obviously. You know, Bob James from 4Play the other day, we were doing an interview, and he said something very interesting. He said that shows you Bob's genius. He feels more comfortable in the studio sometimes because he knows he can go for anything, because he knows he can just go back and fix it if he needs to.
Right.
That's funny. I never thought of it that way, because a lot of people get more nervous in the studio because it's like forever, you know?
Sure.
But he said he just kind of goes for it. And he said live, he really goes for it too, but you know, you only got one chance, you know? You can't go back and fix anything. So it's all performance, you know?
It is. You know, I definitely feel the studio is more of a controlled environment, because you can go back and fix the mistakes. Where, you know, where I'm on the stage, I'm really focusing on the performance end. You know, we know the compositions, but the actual performance end, you know, getting the audience into your sessions and watching them on stage, and, you know, what's really triggering them to really get into the groove. You know, if it's certain tempos, is it certain grooves and things. So, you know, it's definitely focused more on the performance end on the stage than in studio.
No question.
Which I got to ask you, man, do you find yourself finding that zone in the studio more because it is controlled, or do you love the stage to really get into the audience more and your band members when you start improvising and things?
Well, I think they're two different animals, you know. I think I love both, you know, but I would say I'm a little bit of a studio rat. Sometimes athletes they call them gym rats. I'm a little bit of a studio rat, you know.
Sure.
I like the environment. I like the hanging, and I like the fact that you can sort of you can have, it's like a painter in a studio, you know, you got all these colors on your palette, you can pick and choose and say, well, wait a second, what if we just like put the tape on backwards and record, you know what I mean? You
can, right.
It's great, you know, because it affords you a lot of different ideas. But you know what, man, when you get on the stage and you're playing, the energy of the audience meets the energy of the band halfway in the air up there, that's a magic that you just can't, it's inexplicable, and it's so magical. You need that too, and I love that, and so the answer is yes.
All right. All the way
you
around.
Know, the answer is all the above. You
yeah,
know?
Definitely. You know, getting together with Foreplay, Chuck, you know, I know sometimes so many seasoned musicians, you know, have such great ideas. And, you know, I'm a firm believer great minds think alike sometimes. But, you know, coming into an established group, I mean, did it really kind of slow you down for your creative flow? Or were they pretty much open to your ideas, you know, putting songs together?
Well, I'll tell you what. Foreplay is a very interesting example of when, how groupthink can really work. Obviously, it truly is a very democratic method that they have. It was amazing to me to jump into it, and I really enjoyed it. Now, that does mean that sometimes you've got to like scale back some of your own ideas or thoughts and say, okay, yeah, I see your point of view, somebody else's point of view, and just go with it and really get behind it. And sometimes, as we're all individually producers, right? So sometimes it's a little difficult to do because we've got our experiences of having done it ourselves and having success. So it takes a little bit of, you know, well, first of all, we're dealing with guys that we have huge respect for. That makes it easy, and they have great ideas. But I would say they, to their credit, immediately were open to and included my suggestions. So, hey, you know, I mean, it's a give and take, and the give and take is what made that record, and I'm proud of that record. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great new experience to me, and I'm loving it.
Have you guys had a chance to perform yet for any of the tracks on the album?
Yes. We started, it was funny, we finished the album we did it in May, and kind of finished up the recording part of it in June. And right at the end of June, we went into the Blue Note in New York City and played for 6 nights. And the guys said, well, we want to play some of the stuff from the new record. Let's do Chuck's song. So we did Third Degree, like the very first night that I played, you know, that we went in and played. And,
sure.
We've been playing that. And then we just, this last trip that we were just out on, we started playing Pineapple Getaway by Harvey, and then Nate's vocal tune, which is called I'll Still Be Loving You. So we started doing those three, and we're going to include and add the title track on the next batch of gigs that we have, which is beginning in November.
Sure. You know, when you listen to the CD, I personally feel, man, it's all the CDs and songs that are on there are great live songs to play. I think they really translate well on the stage. You know, because I think a lot of times I hear a cut and it's like, oh, that's a great studio song. Would I play that on stage? Maybe not. But no, man, really from number 1 through 11, I mean, they're just great stage songs, you know.
I think so, man. I think we were all saying that the other day when we were picking which songs we were going to add. Nathan said, hey, you can play any of these songs live and make them work and it'd be fun. You know what I mean? So,
right.
But, you know, you also got to remember when you go out, people still want to hear Macho Man and Valley Run and those classic Foreplay songs as well. So, you know, you got to mix it up. But I think we're going to definitely be doing about half of our sets coming up from Let's Touch the Sky. And hey, you know, that's great. I think it's going to be fresh and, you know, give a new twist to the show.
Definitely. So, Chuck, I got to ask you, man, aside from the Foreplay project, what's on the musical agenda coming for the 2011? I mean, we're closing out a year now, so what do you got on plate for next year?
Well, the next thing for me, my own thing, because it's in March, it'll be 2 years since the release of Between Two Worlds. So I'm just now rolling into the process of recording my next project. So I'm still a little bit unsure of exactly the direction I want to go in. You know, Between Two Worlds was a little bit of a different kind of a CD for me, and I think this one may be too. I just haven't pinned sound exactly what it's going to be. I want it to be super different from Foreplay. I want it to be, you know, like something where people can see a completely different side of what I do. So kind of working on that. That's going to be the next thing. And then, you know, I'm supposed to work on Michael Frank's next CD as a producer, and he's still writing, and you have to be very patient. You know, he really takes his time to make sure all the material is what he, you know, wants.
Sure, he's a legend anyways, though, man. You know, he can take as much time as he needs to.
Exactly. That's what I mean, you know. So that's going to happen. And my wife, who's a singer, has a new CD that we just produced. It's coming out. Carmen Cuesta is her name, and she's got the new one of all Bossa Nova. It's called Mi Bossa Nova. And then I've got my daughter, who's also an artist, and she's a singer, songwriter, and a guitarist herself.
Wow.
Lizzie Loeb, and so there's a bunch of stuff to do. Never a dull moment around here.
Man, that's hot, man. Guys have personal family jam sessions, huh?
Oh, yeah. There was one going on. I don't know if you could hear it. There was some music going on in the other room, but yeah, it's great.
Oh, man, that is phenomenal, Chuck. But Chuck, I want to thank you, man, for, you know, taking the time out and chopping it up with me, man. I would love to have you back, man. Talk about your new endeavors and new projects, your wife's projects, and your daughter's project, man.
Cool, man. Well, I'm happy to come back anytime, man. Thanks so much for having me, you know.
Oh, man, best of luck to you in the future, Chuck. Take it easy, man.
All right, Chuck. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Take it easy.
Bye. And a big shout out and thank you to Chuck Lowe for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Been a fan of his music for a long time, very successful solo career, and now branching over and playing with the legendary jazz group Foreplay is just a truly phenomenal musical journey. And the new CD, Let's Touch the Sky with Foreplay, man, you can definitely hear his signature touches as a guitarist, man. So big shout out to Chuck Lowe. And for more information on Chuck Lowe, you need to hit his website up at www.chucklowe.com. Again, www.chuckloeb.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website at www.spud2tight.com. Again, www.spud2tight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have an iPhone, an iPod, or a PC or a Mac, go to the iTunes player, click on the iTunes store, type in the producer's corner of Spud Too Tight, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show. And the title of the track is called Above and Beyond, and it's off the new Foreplay CD release, Let's Touch the Sky. So until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.